And finally, Hannah's been pondering how plants are affected by artificial light in our question of the week.
This week, we shine some light on plants to illuminate a question that Gerald from Chatteris got in touch with.
Chatteris has just replaced all their old street lights. They also removed 10% of them. The new lights are on taller posts, casting white light further than the old amber lighting. The lights have been so bright that my tulips grew leaning over to the new lamp at the front of a neighbour's garden. It took several days of bright sun for them to stand erect.
So, how do streetlights affect plant growth?
I'm Alex Summers. I'm the glasshouse supervisor at Cambridge University Botanic Gardens. Plants require light to photosynthesize, and they require it at two parts of the light spectrum. They require it at between 400 and 450, and 650 and 700. Whereas, from my understanding, a high-pressure sodium lamp works between 570 and 650. So in reality, the light spectrum put out by a high-pressure sodium lamp is probably unlikely to massively affect plant growth. LED lamps, which are becoming increasingly common in lots of lighted equipment, which we can't use at all in plant growth because they don't put out the right spectrum of light.
So streetlights don't emit the correct wavelength of light in nanometers to boost photosynthesis in plants by much. In which case, what's causing Gerald's tulips to change their direction?
I would probably say what Gerald is seeing is the tulips tracking the sun. So as we come more into summer and the sun becomes higher in the sky, it's more likely that what you're seeing is the tulips tracking from late winter and spring with the sun being lower in the sky to the sun moving to a higher point within the sky as spring turns more towards summer.
But are there other ways that streetlights can affect nature?
I'm Richard James and I work in the RSPB's Wildlife Inquiries Department. Probably the most obvious is the sound of birds singing in the middle of the night, particularly robins. Birds generally sing in low light levels at dawn and dusk, and it's thought that the artificial light can actually mimic those low light levels found in the early hours and triggers the birds to sing in the middle of the night. Another relatively common sight is bats feeding on insects around streetlights. The insects are attracted to the lights, and the bats come along and feed on them.
And are the new style streetlights impacting nature in a different way?
There's currently very little evidence that streetlights are having a significant negative impact on our wildlife. However, I have read recently that scientists are concerned that moths are more strongly attracted by brighter white light that has replaced the traditional orange glow from our streetlights. Then thought that these insects are becoming exhausted because they're spending longer periods flying around the lights rather than mating or searching for food, and it can make them more vulnerable to predators too.
Well, with that topic illuminated, we stick with nature and cast our eyes to the skyline to try to answer a question that Eugenie Podolsky wrote in with.
So I'm just wondering, how high could a mountain on Earth be? The Olympus volcano on Mars is about 20 kilometres high. But could a peak on Earth ever reach this height? And if not, why?
So how do mountains form and what's to stop them reaching even further into the sky? Send us your thoughts to studio@thenakedscientists.com. You can tweet at Naked Scientists, you can write on our Facebook page, or you can join in the live debate on our forum, which is at nakedscientists.com/forum.
Hannah Critchlow.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you to our guests, Maria Limberis, Colin Humphreys and Russell Foster. And thank you also to Dave Ansell for joining me. The production this week was by Kate Lamble and Hannah. Next week, we'll be looking at the heights of Everest and the depths of the ocean to discover the physiology behind how humans survive in extreme environments. The Naked Scientist comes to you from Cambridge University. It's supported by the Wellcome Trust and the UPSRC. My name's Chris Smith. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.